powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's officially the start of the Kraken's regular season and their inaugural season. And on the call on Root Sports is John Forslund. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. John, it's been a long time coming. Fans, I'm sure, have a sense of a kind of surreal feeling today. How are you personally feeling?
You're sure it's tonight, right? You're positive?
Totally positive.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm in the right place.
Yeah, you're good.
I can't even start to explain how excited I am, you know, at this stage in my career. This is my 31st year in the National Hockey League, and I've never really felt like this. It's way different than any playoff game I've ever covered, outdoor game I've covered. Even the beginning of the Carolina existence for me back in 97 when the team moved from Hartford. That was a new place and a team that relocated. But nothing like this because of the expansion process, the people that have worked so hard to get it here. And it's just the first step, right, guys? It's just the beginning of long journey. And that's what's so great about this.
You know, John, this is obviously very anticipated, and everybody's so excited to kick off this new era of hockey here in Seattle and what it'll mean to so many hockey fans that have been wanting it here in Seattle and so many that will be embracing a new sport for the first time. When you look at the Kraken heading into this year, what are the, I guess, expectations that they have for themselves, and what are the realistic expectations that people should have?
Well, they expect to make the playoffs. I think if they were honest, and they all have been when asked, I think they expect to be very competitive. The thing that's kind of lurking, and it's ironic that it starts tonight here in Las Vegas, is the success the Golden Knights franchise has had, right? So this is year number 5 of their existence. They've been an elite team for 4 years, and they went to the Stanley Cup final in year number 1. So that's pretty high to set a bar. And if you're a first-year team, everyone's going to remind the Kraken about the success the Golden Knights had. I think realistically, as objective as I can get, when you look at the Pacific Division, it's doable. There are teams that are cycling down in terms of rebuilding that the Kraken, based on their roster, man for man, I think are better than. But there's Vegas, there's Edmonton, Vancouver's going to be way better than they were last year. There's going to be a lot of parity. And what you hope for is that this team is sniffing a playoff spot, you know, March and April. And when that happens, enough time would be by the books where you would then have the fan identity in place. And the energy, I think, that will surround this team will push them into the playoffs. That's what I think will happen. Most importantly, I think fans that know about hockey will really enjoy it. Fans that are new to the game will learn to love it. And the thing about it is these players will become a big part of the community and a big part of what the Kraken are all about. And I think that's what's great about tonight, too, is that this starts a generation of in a history of a franchise, which is really neat to be part of.
Well said, John. How do you see, by the way, the pairings going tonight with some of these guys being out?
Well, that's the hard part, and it's an excellent question. I mean, because, you know, right now, I think the coaching staff is still trying to put together what they're going to do for line combinations and defense pairings, because as late as this morning when I left the rink, the official word had not really been passed along yet as to who was actually going to be in the lineup. Now we know they're going to be missing, you know, 4 very important guys. They're missing Jared McCann, who will be centering their top line. They're going to be missing Kelly Yarncroke, who will be an excellent top penalty killer and a third line guy, but a guy with 9 years of NHL experience. Jamie Oleksiak from the back end, the big rig, 6'7", physical, dominant presence. He won't play tonight. All these guys are out with COVID. And Jonas Donskoy, who scored 17 goals with Colorado last year. And if anything we can say about the Kraken where it'll be a challenge is scoring. Scoring will be a challenge for this team, to be fair. Their balance, their physicality, their energy, their character, their goaltending, that's all good. And that's going to put them in good stead, I think, as I said, to get into the playoffs. But for tonight, there's a lot of mixing and matching. And I don't think we actually know that we see the pregame warm-up who's going to skate with who. But the adrenaline factor, and all the work they put in throughout training camp hopefully will carry them through.
John, you mentioned all of those things, all of those factors. Mm-hmm. And so when should fans have a good idea as to how this team is forming? At what point can you say, all right, I know exactly who these guys are and how they're going to come together this year? Because obviously there's still a lot to work through.
Honestly, I'd give it to Christmas, to be fair. I think, you know, they could catch lightning in a bottle and go on this winning streak to start the season. That would be great. I think when you look at the five-game road trip, and usually what we do is you break down a season in five-game segments. It's easier to look at 82 games, especially in hockey, because hockey is played with a lot of emotion and games kind of bleed into the other positively and negatively. So if you look at a five-game segment, each game's worth 2 points. You got 10 points on the table. If you can get out of there with six, you're doing okay. You're likely to make the playoffs. And so as they start this season, they're playing an elite team tonight, a legitimate Stanley Cup contender in Vegas. You know, then they go to Nashville, and Nashville's kind of hit or miss. I don't think they're a playoff team. It'll be a good test, but it's their home opener. Then there's Columbus, who's rebuilding. And I would say the Kraken have an excellent shot to win that game. Philadelphia is a good team, not a great team, a good team. And New Jersey's a rebuilding team. So points are available on this road trip. If they were at their full complement, they're going to have to gut this thing out. It's really too bad. This team has had to navigate the pandemic like we all have, but this whole organization has had to do this through the entire process. And now at the end, which is the beginning, they get kicked again by COVID, right? So what I would say is, with the newness of everything and the way the game is, you got to give it time as a fan, and just watch it closely. Watch the process. Listen to some of the cliches, because they are very important. They do mean something, and that's what this will be. And it'll be a journey. But the good news is, in the Pacific Division, it's attainable. It's not the toughest division in the NHL, so they're in a good spot.
All right, a couple specific names here, John. I'll start with this one. What's the latest with Yanni Gourde?
Yeah, he's here, and he looks great. He's looked great the entire training camp. And, you know, I had word early before they broke camp that he was ahead of schedule. I have no idea what that means, right? When they say a guy's out for months, and then they say he's ahead of schedule, and they leave it at that without giving a definitive word, who the heck knows what that means, right? So you watch closely every day, and every day that I watched him, it was like, wow, this guy is very close. And then he went from a red jersey to a normal jersey, which means he was, you know, he's non-contact at first, then he was able to sustain some contact. They're going to be careful because it's a shoulder problem. His original timetable was Thanksgiving, early December. The way it is now, I would say, I don't think he'll play in this road trip, but I would say it's a slight possibility. And I would think in and around the home opener, there's a really good chance he's probably going to play. I see him playing for sure in November, which will be great because he's going to be a very important player.
John, there was some conversation around the announcement that Mark Giordano would become the captain of the Kraken, and there were some people that were curious if they were going to eventually name him. I think if they were going to name somebody, that was the obvious pick, but sometimes, you know, teams hold off from naming a captain. What does that signify to you with the decision of Dave Haxtell and Ron Francis to go ahead and elect him the captain?
Another really good question, because when they went with him in the expansion draft, you're taking a player who has this long history, 8 years, the last 8 years as the captain, 15 years with Calgary, 2 years ago, the best defenseman in the NHL, but you're bringing him here in the last year of his contract. And there's a lot of speculation when that happens. You know, what are they going to do with him? Are they going to extend him? Are they going to end up trading him at the deadline so he can go win a Stanley Cup somewhere else and get a lot in return to improve the franchise moving forward? All of that's logical to think about. But when they ordain him captain, you got to think he's going to be a big part of the future moving forward. So I'm not the GM. I can't even go there in terms of what they're going to do with a contract for him moving forward. But let's hope they do, because as an example setter, this is the best guy you could have. What you want to have when you're establishing a culture is a player that young guys and older guys can point to and say, that's what a Seattle Kraken player is supposed to look like. That's how he's supposed to play. That's how he's supposed to behave off the ice. This guy checks every single box you want to check. Physical player, yes. Plays through pain, yes. Leads by example, yes. Tireless athlete, yes. Puts points on the board. He did a lot more of that a few years ago. We'll see what happens here, but can still do it. Has led a winning team, yes. Has played in the playoffs, yes. And you look at his charitable contributions in Calgary, and he's going to go to work in the community in Seattle, and it's A-plus across the board. So this is the type of individual that the Seattle fan base will embrace. And most importantly, inside the dressing room, he's the guy that they'll look at in the tough times. You know, when there is tough sledding, when there are people questioning if this team will be good enough, you know, that's when you really need your captain, and that's what he's all about.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. We're speaking with Root Sports Kraken play-by-play John Forslund. John, we know the general themes heading into the season of what this team can be, right? Great defensively. They've got a great goaltending pair, but where's the offense going to come from? So what are maybe just one or two players you're most curious to see tonight, or just one thing you're most curious to see?
The one thing I'm frustrated by is the fact that we're not going to see and listen to the play of Jared McCann, Jaden Schwartz, and Jordan Eberle as a line, because they were that good in training camp. And it's amazing that these three players have been able to come together and get this kind of chemistry very quickly. But because they're all three veteran players, they all have a high skill level, they know how to play off each other already, that harmony was in place. So without McCann, it's tough. But Eberle, you know, he's a natural scorer, and he's going to be what looks like an outlier on this roster. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. He's going to get circled in the other locker room. You know, he's a guy that they're going to try and check and watch, because the other guys are going to bring a little bit more support, a little more grit and balance, you know, to the table than, say, a natural scorer like that. Schwartz has a lot of potential because of his past and the fact that last year it was a nightmare for him. I mean, he never got off the mark with St. Louis. He lost his dad in the offseason in November. It was really a tough situation for him. He's been through a lot of stuff, injuries, personal adversity, and this is a new beginning for him. And Jaden Schwartz is a Stanley Cup winner. He knows his way around the net, and that showed in preseason too. So I look at that, and I think that's a big positive.
John, you've already talked and touched on the goalies, but Chris Dreger just wrote an awesome article in the Players Tribune, and I recommend anybody going and looking and reading through that. It very, very much reminds me of all the just the crazy path that Major League Baseball players have to go through in the minor leagues or the NHL, the same thing. You know, for a lot of these guys, this is a unique opportunity, a unique shot to make their mark. How awesome is it for these guys to get this unique opportunity that maybe they didn't have with other organizations that they're getting with the Kraken?
Well, it's a repurpose and a reset, whatever the word you want to put attached to this, for every single one of these guys. And it's funny, you know, I just was breezing through some stuff. I haven't read that piece yet, but I saw the headline, and I'm going to read it. Because that's why when we watch every sport, right, and there's a great moment, and there's the post-game interview, it's emotional because the player, you know, is emotional because of what just happened. They make the big play. The team wins the game. They win a championship, advance in a playoff series, whatever the case is. But I think what ends up hitting a lot of these guys is what you just said, is their journey. And every single player has a different journey. You know, the first round draft choices path of this league is a lot different than the sixth round draft choice. The undrafted, like Giordano, is an undrafted free agent. The only time he was drafted was in the expansion draft because he wasn't drafted into junior hockey. So he had to try out to make junior hockey and did. He had to somehow make a team in the National Hockey League and did, and then become an elite player. That almost never happens, right? So I think they get overwhelmed with that moment because so many people help them along the way, and it's so hard to get to this place. Just to play one game in the NHL or any professional sport is a real accomplishment. So, what ends up happening here is there's 23 guys in the roster, and there's 23 different stories. It's our job to talk about it all season and equate the fans with it. But think about it, too, when you go back to certain places, every time the Kraken goes somewhere for the first time and that player walks in that building, that chip is huge on the shoulder, right? That they walk in there, they want to prove, you left me off the list, well, I'm here to prove something. And that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
He is Root Sports' John Forslund on the call tonight for the Kraken's regular season opener. The first regular season game ever, this one on the road against the Vegas Golden Knights. John, man, thanks so much for helping us get ready for this one. We really appreciate the time.
I can't wait. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Thanks. Have a good one. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. It's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, what positive news did we hear regarding Chris Carson?
Well, the positive news that we heard regarding Chris Carson is the fact that in a Pete Carroll-ism that, hey, Chris Carson's neck, you know that neck thing that he's been dealing with? Well, according to Pete Carroll, something good happened here. Cut number six.
Big turn. He had a big turn over the weekend, and so we'll see how it goes.
Now, big turn. What does that mean, Stacey? In Pete Carroll's words, big turn over the weekend meant that Chris Carson's, his neck was starting to feel a lot better. All of a sudden, he is magically healed.
Such a Pete Carroll-ism.
You know what it reminds me
of?
Is it like the olden times when, you know, someone had a fever, like legitimately that could be a death sentence, and then you just wait it out and hopefully the fever would break? It's like, oh, we had a big turn over the night, you know, now they're going to be okay. With Chris Carson and his neck, though, the fact that he's got this big turn, the fact that there is positive news with him and that he could be healthy and ready to go for this game against Pittsburgh is vital. They need him out there specifically because of Russell Wilson not being able to be out there. You need to give support. You need the supporting cast around Geno Smith to help him out as much as possible. And as they're going up against a very, very difficult defense in the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, they're ninth in rush defense, 10th in points allowed. You're going to need to have all of your workhorses available, and Chris Carson certainly is at the top of that list.
I'm now imagining an old-timey Pete Carroll using the same Pete Carrollisms, but for like deadly diseases from like 1905.
He's a tremendous healer.
Yeah, he's like,
he's got dysentery, but he's making a turn.
Yeah, you know, it's TB. It's legit TB, but we'll see how it turns around. He made a big turn. Second down. Ethan Posick.
With scarlet fever.
You know, he's got a legit leg. Just one left. We had to get rid of the other one.
But, you know, he's got a great attitude.
Ethan Posick returned to practice. Do you anticipate him taking over for Kyle Fuller as the starting center again?
Yeah, I do. I mean, when Pete Carroll's talking about Ethan Posick getting himself, inserting himself back into the lineup and potentially that competition, what that tells to me is that it's wide open, and it should be, because Kyle Fuller has not taken it and run with the job. He has really struggled at times in run blocking and pass protection. And overall, to me, when I look at that, this offense needs Ethan Posick to step up. This offensive line needs him to step up, because it was envisioned with him being at his best this offseason. The plan was for Ethan Posick to be the starting center. It got derailed by the fact that he had hamstring issues all through training camp. So if Ethan Posick can get himself back into the lineup and playing well and playing up to the talent that he has, that would be a tremendous development for this offense as they head into the next, you know, quarter of the season. I believe that to me is positive news, and we'll see if he actually ends up winning the job, so to speak, over the course of the week.
Third down. People are texting in now old-timey, like 1800 Carrollisms, and I can't read it.
Yeah, but it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It ends with in classic fashion.
And it's about the Salem witch trial.
Oh, gosh.
Third down. What did you make of Pete Carroll's non-answer about defensive communication in his presser yesterday?
Well, let's listen to that non-answer here in cut number seven.
Defensively, have you kind of figured out where the communication is not landing between your staff and the players in terms of executing the stuff that you guys are practicing and then getting beat on in the game?
That's four questions there. Yeah, we're working real hard at getting better.
Everybody's in on it. We're all together on that.
So, Coach Carroll being a little prickly there with a question.
He's been a little prickly.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not fun to have people question you about the defense and the communication specifically. And, you know, what it tells me, though, is that through this process, not only is Pete Carroll frustrated and annoyed by the questions, it means that he's also really annoyed that the issues keep popping up, and that he is working extremely hard behind the scenes to make sure that his guys are executing. And there is an element of We are coaching. We are communicating as to what you need to do in these situations. How do you pattern match the different route combinations that they're going to throw at you? And then eventually, you've got to execute that on game day. It's up to you, Bobby. It's up to you, Jordan Brooks. It's up to you, Marquise Blair, Ugo Amadi. It's up to you, Jamal Adams, Sidney Jones, to know what the heck your coverage is. That, to me, is what stands out, and I can only imagine how frustrated Pete Carroll is as he's had the same system. Hasn't changed since he's been here. The same system, and guys have the hardest time in executing it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the key to this game heading into Sunday, is whether or not their defensive stars and their defensive group can have better communication and work better together to avoid the mishaps that they have had over the middle of the field and throughout, you know, multiple busted coverages.
From the point of view of the reporter, maybe the biggest question facing this team outside of when is Russell Wilson getting back is what's happening with the defense. You've got Jamal Adams, you've got Bobby Wagner, you've got a first-round pick with LJ Collier, who's been a healthy scratch a couple times. You've got a first-round pick with Jordan Brooks. You've got a second-rounder with Daryl Taylor, who's actually playing well. Props to Daryl Taylor, not to necessarily include him in this conversation, but using it for the purpose of saying that there's some investments there. And Pete Carroll also has a lot of faith in guys like Wagner. Seemed to be very excited about Jamal Adams when they got him, and even last year ahead of the draft. And so from the reporter's point of view, it's like, well, what is the answer? Like, some of this makes no sense, right? Like, you've got talent. You were great at the end of last season. It can't just be that you were facing poor offenses. I know that was an impact there, but you weren't just, like, succeeding against poor offenses. You were first overall in the league in sacks over the last 7 weeks and finished seventh overall. So what worked
right
well that isn't now? And I think that, you know, from Pete Carroll's point of view, it's like, wish I could tell you. Like, I would imagine that there's an aspect of, like, I don't know, man. Like,
yeah.
We think we're coaching right, and the guys think that they're doing things right, and it's just not coming together. So it's a fascinating conversation. I can see why he's getting prickly, but completely understand why the question was
it
asked
will
by Michael Sean.
Only heat up as yeah they continue to struggle.
All right, fourth down. What challenge does Geno Smith face as the full-time starter over the next couple weeks?
Well, the challenge is that he's going to face some pretty legit defenses over the next 2 weeks when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and when you look at the New Orleans Saints. These are two teams that can really get after the quarterback. They do a great job in the running game, and they've got answers in terms of how they handle things from a passing perspective that is really well thought out and that everyone knows how to work together. There's no gimmies out there. So it's going to be on Geno Smith to be precise. It's going to be on Geno Smith to really take care of the football in some very difficult situations with that pocket collapsing around you. So that is going to be the difficult task and responsibility that Geno Smith will have as he's trying to guide this team and keep their playoff chances alive over the next 3 weeks. And you're going to need help from everybody around you in the running game. You're going to need help from your pass catchers, for guys to make special plays for you. So overall, to me, that's what stands out, particularly when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've got a lot of stars. They've got a lot of good players, and they've played some very good teams. Don't let the 3-game losing streak prior to Denver this last week fool you. They played some very good offenses that were performing at a high level. The Seahawks offense is 100% going to have to earn it on Sunday.
All right, going to try to go a little glass half full here. Russell Wilson is out for sure for this Sunday. So will we see areas of improvement anywhere on the offense? What do we expect to see? We'll talk about that next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Breaking news from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. The Seahawks are releasing former starting cornerback Trey Flowers. Source said, this is a direct quote, a move that he recently requested. An experienced corner with 4 years of starting experience is now available. So, again, that news breaking literally a few minutes ago. According to Ian Rappaport, the Seahawks are releasing former starting cornerback Trey Flowers, a move that Trey Flowers recently requested. So Trey looking for a new start there. Meanwhile, another Trey could be returning to this team. That's rookie cornerback Trey Brown, who could be coming off the injured reserve. He was a participant in practice this week. Pete Carroll has not ruled out the chance that he returns to the team this weekend.
That is one I did not expect whatsoever. Did not expect them to release Trey Flowers. And I wonder what that means in regards to Trey Brown. He came back, right? So that's the only thing that is a common that is a factor here is that Trey Brown is coming back to the roster,
and that Sidney Jones is now the starter. So it could be that no matter what, Flowers presumably was like, I've been benched, I want another chance.
Yes, and I believe that's also probably another factor in this as well, that between him and his agent, they probably communicated to Pete Carroll and John Schneider and said, hey, clearly my opportunity here has passed me by. Let me hit the open market and let me see if I can, you know, start somewhere else and find a new home. And obviously this organization being gracious enough to do that. And you also have to think about the fact that they added Bless Austin as well to this roster and to this competition. So there's a lot of other players at play here that are going to get opportunities and shots, because Sidney Jones has not played well enough to have solidified his positioning. So I wonder how many opportunities they're actually going to give Trey Brown now that he's come back and he is healthy.
It's not great to know the Seahawks are heading into week six and you're genuinely unsure who's going to be their starting cornerback, like week 7, 8, 9, 10. Like, you do wonder, like, okay, can Jones keep this job on lock, and can he just kind of integrate himself into this scheme and figure things out and kind of settle in? Or is this going to be suddenly Bless Austin comes in to compete? Is it going to be suddenly Trey Brown, a rookie, coming in to compete? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't mean this as a shot. There were moments that really stood out for all of these guys individually, but there was no one guy of this cornerback group, and DJ Reed was injured through much of camp, that really stood out in camp.
No,
there was no clear guy where you're like, that's your best guy.
Not at all, and that was my greatest frustration, is here you're trying to create competition and trying to have that happen. That was your desired outcome when you put together the offseason plan. If you're Pete Carroll and John Schneider, is, hey, we're going to go young, we're going to add a little bit of veteran experience here, but we want to create legitimate competition, and guys are going to have to earn their spots. And what ended up happening is Witherspoon was a dud. Trey Brown didn't perform. He didn't perform to the level they wanted, and on top of that, he was injured. So it didn't work out the way you were hoping. No one, the cream did not rise to the top, and so what you were forced to do is to start Trey Flowers, and they tried to convince everybody that Trey Flowers was having the best training camp that he's ever had here, which was not what was going on at all. And here's the thing. It did not work out here, but there is so much about Trey Flowers that I really appreciate, and I honestly wish him nothing but the best moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy that, one, is a great individual, but also he was a great interview. He was gracious to anybody here in Seattle that interviewed him. We had some great conversations with him in the midst of a ton of criticism. And I really respect that about a guy, because there's a lot of guys that would lash out or they just wouldn't do interviews at all. And he was extremely gracious, extremely open, with a positive attitude every single time, rooting for him. But it just didn't work out here. And it was a bummer, because you thought that the Seahawks had found another steal, another gem, by converting Trey Flowers from safety to corner his rookie year. And he just never got better, and just for whatever reason got progressively worse. And that was a development that really truly was a bummer to me, and I'm sure, you know, everyone within that organization, because they wanted to see him flourish and wanted to see him grow. And what ended up happening was you had a corner in Trey Flowers that it was a confidence thing. It wasn't a talent. It wasn't a physical issue. Had all the physical gifts in the world, but just confidence-wise never got to the point where he consistently was trusting his eyes, trusting what he was seeing, and driving and reacting to what was happening in front of him in pass coverage.
Now, here is one of the weird moments, and you might hear this news that the Seahawks, from Ian Rappaport, the Seahawks are releasing former starting cornerback Trey Flowers, and that sounds like that was a request from Flowers himself. Obviously, wish him the best. He, I'm sure, wants a chance to be a starter with another team, and clearly sensed that he wasn't going to get that opportunity here. More power to him. But he was also your most experienced starter still on this team.
Yep.
Following the loss of Griffin in free agency.
He definitely was.
And you can think what you want about Trey Flowers, but he was your most experienced starting cornerback.
He was. So now you're entering a whole new world when it comes to the cornerback position. DJ Reed being the guy that is the veteran player in that room. And he has not even a full year of starting experience here with the Seattle Seahawks. That's crazy to think about. And they're really, you know, grasping for straws here when it comes down to figuring out who is going to take the mantle next to DJ Reed. So this is a situation that has not worked out well for the Seahawks at all. They're paying the price for it. It's honestly not solely on the cornerback group, but it definitely doesn't help in terms of the issues that they've had in pass coverage.
I'm calling an audible with this entire segment because obviously we had that breaking news about Trey Flowers. So we were going to talk about what the offense can do against the Steelers. We're going to go ahead and save that for tomorrow since Jake's been watching a ton of tape on the Steelers defense. So we'll have a fun deep dive on that during tomorrow's show. But just for the last kind of minute or so here, let's talk about what needs to happen with the defense to kind of, I don't want to say make up for the loss of Flowers. He was on the bench anyway. Sidney Jones was going to be your starter, but you look at still a lot of remaining question marks in your secondary with those two corners. Who suddenly bears the burden of making sure that entire secondary can stay afloat? It feels obvious that it's your two safeties, but I feel like it's got to stretch further than that.
It does have to stretch further than that because it's not just that. I mean, Quandre Diggs is playing really good football right now. Like, he really is. The problem to me has been the middle of the field, that there's no continuity between the underneath coverage and the corners and the safeties. Like, that part has to get figured out and it has to get shored up, because if you go through the entire season with these issues and continuing to point the fingers and not being able to come to a resolution, it's going to be a major issue. The bottom is going to fall out on this team, and they're at a critical point right now in their season, and they have to be able to step up from a defensive perspective and fix those issues, or else the Steelers, the Saints, are going to give you some major problems.
Yeah, they need to be able to get back up after being knocked down.
Yes, they do.
Get knocked down,
Stacey,
but you get up again.
Gosh. You're never going to get me down. Yeah. Chumbawamba.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What I need to know is coming your way, 206-421-3776. That is the Mac and Jackson text line. I hate myself for that. 206-421-3776. No, I love it. Text your questions in. Any question, turning it over to you guys next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Some more breaking news, this one from Field Yates. Following Russell Wilson's injury, the Seahawks are working out quarterback Blake Bortles.
Oh! Get psyched.
Oh.
This is a look into the reality of what it's like to not have a franchise quarterback. The musical chairs at quarterback hopefully will only last here a couple weeks. That is my hope. So,
well, that's the hope. Otherwise, man.
There's only one quarterback in the Seahawks building that's been to a conference championship game as recently as 2015.
That is Blake Bortles.
That's Blake Bortles.
I hate that stat,
man,
so much, Curtis.
I do too. It's ridiculous. But the reason why Blake Bortles is getting the workout is because he did spend some time in Los Angeles and with the Rams, and so he knows the offense that Shane Waldron wants to run. And so when you talk about experience, Blake Bortles has it. And if you're talking about backing up Geno Smith, it's not a bad thing to do. But it also is curious to me why you go and snag Jake Luton and why you put him on your 53-man roster if you don't feel confident enough to elevate him when the time comes.
Yeah.
So it's unique, but at the same time, I understand why Shane Waldron would want a little bit more stability if Geno Smith were to go down or if something were to go awry in that situation. And if they do end up signing Blake Bortles, the one thing that I would be on the lookout for is the fact that the Seahawks probably would end up putting Russell Wilson on IR because he only has to be on IR for 3 weeks. So that's probably what the corresponding move would be.
All right. Again, this is What I Need to Know. Any question you want, send it into this number, 206-421-3776. Any question. I'm actually stealing this one, which was from an earlier segment, but since we're on the Kraken theme for today from the 206, without sounding like a complete moron, can y'all explain the point system with hockey? Is it like soccer? Answer is, yeah, kind of. It's 2 points for a win, 1 point if you get to overtime, even if you lose in overtime. If you get to overtime, it's 1 point, and obviously zero for a loss. So the goal, like Curtis said, 1 point on the road, getting to overtime, even if you lose to Vegas, would be a pretty decent start to the season for the Kraken, especially with a couple guys that are on the COVID list. All right, back to a couple other questions here. What I need to know, does the lack of chemistry with defense have anything to do with the way teams practice now in training camp?
I mean, the aspect of them in terms of changing in training camp, I think it falls within every single organization, because not every organization went down the road that a lot of, which has been the new trend of holding guys out of the preseason games and really trying to do everything that they can to avoid injury starting week one. There were a lot of other teams that played their starters starting in the preseason. The Cardinals being one of those teams, actually. So I really believe that there's going to be a lot of teams that went and dabbled down that road like the Seattle Seahawks did. And I bet you that Pete Carroll's going to feel differently about it heading into next year. So I would anticipate that even though they tried to do that this year and take care of their guys, most likely they will not have that same approach again.
Next question here. I need to know if Geno Smith will have any advantage for the first couple of weeks just because the other teams don't have big files on him.
No. I don't think so. Coming in that situation at the end of the game, I guarantee you the Rams did not anticipate that Geno Smith was going to sit there in empty and continue to throw the football and do what he did. But you're talking about starting from snap one. It's different. There's a different mentality. There's a different approach. And there's not really anything that they're going to do offensively that they weren't doing already. It's really just stylistically how Geno Smith reads and operates and throws and his decision-making versus Russell Wilson's decision-making. I don't think you're going to see any different or new plays just because Geno Smith is back there under center.
Now, there are no spoilers here before I read this question, just so you know, no spoilers. Someone said, continuing Squid Game questions, we were getting one from yesterday, what injuries have you all sustained while playing children's games? I've severed my AC joint playing kickball. Ooh, from the 757.
Yikes.
We all know mine. I dislocated my elbow playing Floor is Lava at...
That's right.
At 19 years old.
And in college.
And in college.
Stacy was really cool.
Yes.
Long story short, no, I have not injured myself playing, playground games.
Well,
or
you have broken your ankle
games.
Getting juked on a return.
Stacy, that's playing a real game. That's not playing a childhood game, which is the question. Okay, don't change the subject. All right. No, I did not get injured doing any of that.
My only playground injury, and I was a kid when this happened, is in PE class in elementary school. I broke my hand falling while doing like a bear crawl on the hard gym floor.
What? What happened? What'd you do?
My hand fell out from underneath me and I landed funny on it.
Oh,
broke my hand.
God. That's also kind
of... But I was like 7, 8 years old. Yeah. I wasn't, 21 like Stacy was.
I didn't have a physical injury.
I was not 21, first of all.
You're 23.
I was 19.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have a physical injury, but a mental one. I have become claustrophobic. Yes, traumatized, because you know the kids that when you're on the slide and then the kids just like start causing
piling
a log jam
and you get stuck in the middle.
Yes.
Oh,
that happened to me.
Oh,
no, thank you.
That happened to me. It was in the I was in the fourth grade. That happened to me. Log jam. I'm stuck in the middle. And there's kids trying to push down on me and kick down because they're trying to go down.
I'm getting claustrophobic right
there's
now.
There's these dumb nightmare. Kids that are laughing and clogging it up. So you know what I did? I panicked.
Broke through the slide.
I jumped over the top of the rest of the kids so I could get out.
Yep.
And yeah, that traumatized me for the rest of my life. And now I'm definitely claustrophobic.
I don't like it.
Emotional scars.
What I need to know, who's responsible for the secondary needs? Oh, no. Who's responsible for not addressing secondary needs, Pete or John? I mean, there's a lot that goes into the defense being where it is now that isn't necessarily, in my opinion, on one person. But I do think that player acquisition and drafting is part of it.
How about both? because yeah. both of them are a part of it. Both of them are putting together the roster. Both of them are in charge of looking at talent acquisition. And ultimately, Pete Carroll has to give the final say of whether he agrees, whether he disagrees, what he desires, what he wants. And John Schneider, it's up to him as well to fulfill that want and need. So I would say both of them in terms of where they're currently at from a talent acquisition standpoint, whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency.
This person said they had a scratched cornea from taking a Frisbee to the eye. I don't know if that's worse than the slide story. I'm going to have nightmares about the slide story, Jake.
Yeah.
That's my new Squid Game.
That's why whenever my kids are on the playground, like when it comes to the slide, I mean business. Like I am monitoring the slide. I'm not letting any jokester out there try to clog up the slide on my watch. Yeah, that's right. You are not going to do that while Jackson and Bodie and eventually River are going down the slide. No way.
All right.
Not a chance.
Yeah, thanks for the nightmares. All right, that'll do it for Jake and I today. For Curtis Rogers, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. Also, by the way, Robert Turbin is going to be in for Dave. That's today, right? Lefko, yes, Robert Turbin in. All right,
like
don't go anywhere.
7 minutes.
Yeah, instead of Wyman and Bob, it's Wyman and Turbo. Next, coming your way on 710 ESPN Seattle.